ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
From an Ipswich fish and chip shop to the epicentre of Australian politics.
Please explain.
Pauline Hanson is making its One Nation.
This is the unlikely story of One Nation.
Well, I'm back.
Is it a passing protest vote or a permanent realignment of Australian politics?
Whether you love her or hate her, truth is stranger than fiction.
The making of One Nation. To hear the full series, search for The Making of One Nation on ABC Listen.
When is an organisation a terrorist group? Hi, Damien Carrick with you. This is The Law Report on ABC Radio National. The England and Wales Court of Appeal has upheld the ban of the Palestine Action Group. The court ruled that it was open to the Home Secretary to find that the group is a terrorist organisation. This decision came just a few days after a criminal court sentenced four Palestine Action activists to jail for a violent clash which fractured a police officer's spine and caused about $2.4 million in damage to the UK operations of an Israeli defence firm. Professor David Mead is a human rights law professor based at the University of East Anglia. At the request of Palestine Action, he provided expert written evidence at the original court challenge to whether or not the organisation should be classified as a terrorist organisation. David, welcome to the Law Report. Tell me briefly, what evidence did you provide?
I provided evidence on two things. The first was the chilling effect of the ban on academic freedom, so my ability or other people's ability to teach students and to conduct research. And my evidence was that that might be restricted by the ban. And the second bit was based on research that I had done on previous direct action groups and looking at the sorts of activities they'd undertaken and the sorts of damage that they had caused and that they had not been banned. And so my evidence before the court was that other groups had been treated in a more lenient way. And that was before the High Court hearing late last year.
And are you a supporter or a member of Palestine Action?
I'm not, no. I'm an academic lawyer.
So, David, for listeners here in Australia, tell me about the Palestine Action Group. What is its agenda and how many members or supporters does it have?
Well, that's a good question, because it's difficult now to know anything about Palestine Action for obvious reasons, because it's been banned. But the evidence in the court cases, formed in about 2020, mailing list of about 20,000 people. In the witness statement that it provided to the court, it was described as a direct action protest group aimed at preventing military targets in the UK from facilitating gross abuses of international law. It is largely aimed at a company called Elbit, a supplier of arms to Israel in the ongoing conflict in Gaza. And its primary aim, broadly speaking, is to stop that company from trading and from supplying arms. It's non-hierarchical, it's grassroots. It put out something called an underground manual for training for direct action. People who want to go on direct action. It operates along lines of, and this was the evidence that it gave in the manual, but also the court described it as operating in covert cells. So it engages in non-violent direct action. Certainly, violence is not intended towards people. And again, we will, I know, in this interview, look at the Filton sentencing, but it's avowedly non-violent as part of its strategy, but engages in quite serious property damage as a means of bringing about what it sees to be its policy goal of stopping this company. So spray painting, breaking into factories, destroying arms equipment, destroying computer equipment that helps the company run, all those sorts of things.
David, when back in mid-2025 it was declared by the UK government to be a terrorist organisation, what was the practical effects of that classification?
Two things, really. So the first thing that it does is it bans the group from existing. So this has been a power in the UK for many, many years. It came in initially to deal with the terrorist groups in Northern Ireland. And that was the power existed simply for those groups for many, many years throughout the 70s and into the 80s. Then that put the power to bang terrorist groups connected with Islamic terrorism and a little bit later sort of far-right terrorism, international groups rather than just simple domestic groups, was given to the Home Secretary. And so the power is a power to ban. So you do two things, really. You ban the group if the Home Secretary believes they are, this is the statutory term, concerned in terrorism. And then the consequences of that ban are that various separate offences are created. So it's an offence to organise meetings on behalf of, or to wear items of clothing, or to carry articles that arouse a reasonable suspicion that you might be a member of or a supporter of a banned organisation. So in the same way as it would have been many years ago an offence to wear an item of clothing that suggested you were a member or a supporter of the IRA or the UDF in Northern Ireland, it was and still is an offence to wear an item of clothing, to hold a placard that suggests that you are a member or supporter of Palestine Action. So it's the consequential offences, you know, designed to cut off support, designed to cut off publicity. It's a power that's, you know, it's in addition to ordinary criminal law.
And I understand that since the banning in mid-2025, some 2,700 to 3,000 people have been arrested for holding placards, signs in support of Palestine Action.
Yes, that's right. So there have been a sort of various protests that have taken place from early July last year and through the summer of last year, where large numbers of people just simply took to the streets, sat down outside, you know, monuments and places in London, Glasgow, British cities, simply with placards that said either something like, I support Palestine Action, or I oppose genocide, I support Palestine Action. And that is on its face an offence. It's an offence to be supporting a group. And this has led to an absolute, you know, large number of arrests for that offence. So that the annual crime data that the Home Office, so our Internal Affairs Home Office releases, is that 92% of all arrests for terrorism offences in 2025 were for Palestine Action-related causes or offences. So there were just over 3,000 arrests in total, and about 2,800 were for terrorism offences. And even more sort of surprising, of all the offences for terrorism that have taken place in the UK since 2001, when we had a major revamp of legislation, just over half of them have come in a single year. So 54% of all terrorism arrests in the UK in the last 25 years took place in a single calendar year, almost all of them for variations on wearing or carrying something to arouse reasonable suspicion that you support Palestine Action.
And have they come before the courts and been found guilty and sentenced?
Most of them are in the pipeline. There are something like 700 pending cases in England and Wales that were waiting the outcome of the Court of Appeal decision. So the criminal justice system has basically been put on hold for almost exactly the last year, waiting the outcome of this Court of Appeal decision. I mean, there were some ridiculously large numbers. A single weekend in August last year, just over 500 people arrested in London. Similarly, in September, 857 people arrested. So this is, you know, a major drain on policing resources in order to arrest this large number of people, to process them through police stations, to hold them if they are going to be on remand. I don't know. Many are bailed, but then there's a whole system sort of adjacent to that. But it's not just the numbers, Damien. It's the sorts of people, you know, the demographics of the people being arrested that is so noteworthy. So of those 532 arrested in August, 112 of them were aged over 70. At least one, I've seen the photographs, was an 89-year-old woman, and also a vicar or a priest of 83. So the sorts of people who are now getting arrested for terrorism offences is of a totally different sort to the people that were being arrested pre-2025. The average age of those 2,800 arrests for Palestine Action-related offences is 59, and also massive change in terms of men and women. So the historic norm in the UK for terrorism offences has been about something like about 80, 85, 90% have been men arrested for terrorist-related offences. broadly speaking, it is now roughly on a par, I think, of men and women, perhaps a little more in favour of women, in fact, being arrested. So now that's a really significant change in sort of criminal justice and state policy towards terrorism.
So Palestine Action was banned in June, July last year, and Palestine Action challenged that in the courts. And in February this year, that ban was overturned by London's High Court. What did the judge find? Why did they overturn the ban?
Palestine Action had four grounds, and two succeeded before the High Court. So the two that succeeded were that the Home Secretary had failed to follow published policy. In very brief terms, the policy set out various factors that she should take into account when deciding whether or not to ban, such as the nature and scale of their activities, the threat to overseas nationals. But on her evidence, in the statement that she gave to Parliament, she took account of expansive factors. You know, a ban would allow me to disrupt their infrastructure, would allow me, to defend further upstream. And the High Court held that was unlawful. Her policy was a limiting policy, and she took into account expansive factors, so she didn't follow her policy. So that was ground one that they succeeded. And ground two was that the decision was, in human rights terms, disproportionate. So there was little issue that the ban was lawful under the Terrorism Act, little dispute that the group was engaged in terrorism. Terrorism in the UK has a very, very wide meaning. I think it's very similar meaning in Australian Commonwealth law. So includes serious damage to property for an ideological or political purpose where you intend to influence the government. But that's not the only question in the UK anymore. The question in the UK is a twofold one. First, do you meet the test? Answer here, yes, the ban was lawful under the Act, but it always has to be assessed for human rights compliance. So we are members of the European Convention. We have our Human Rights Act, similar to the Charter in Victoria. And so all governmental decisions have to be assessed for proportionality. And here the question was this a ban that disproportionately affected the group and its members and people who generally wanted to protest about Palestine? Did it disproportionately affect their freedom of expression and assembly? And the High Court held that it did. The High Court's view was that this was a ban that was imposed too early and on the evidence for too few terrorist activities. So there was no doubt in the High Court's mind that the group was a terrorist group. In the mind of the court, of High Court, this is a long way from traditional disruptive, non-violent, direct action, the sort that we would associate, say, with Gandhi or Martin Luther King and those sorts of things. But largely, they had involved in criminal acts, but criminal acts that were not terrorist, so were not serious damage to property. And as a result, in the balance, bearing in mind the various rights and interests and things like that involved, this was a decision that the Home Secretary took that was disproportionate. And so that means it's unlawful.
But just last week, five justices of the Court of Appeal of England and Wales unanimously overturned that earlier February decision of the lower court. And those five judges said the UK government can ban the organisation. What did the judges say?
They effectively overruled the High Court and disagreed entirely with the approach that it took. So this was a review. It's sort of an interesting legal issue as well, subsidiary, because the Court of Appeal here undertook a review de novo. So instead of this being just a review on was this a serious error by the High Court, the Court of Appeal undertook its own balancing exercise and concluded that the proportionality balance had been wrongly struck and lay elsewhere. So on that second ground, the proportionality ground, the Court of Appeal took into account things such as there were very few serious incidents, the fact that many people regarded the ban as heavy-handed, the fact that the previous bans of groups had all been of groups that advocated violence, but said there were too many other factors on the other side of the equation. You know, the nature of its activities were a long way from being traditional civil disobedience. There was a key benefit for the Home Secretary for national security in its dealing with allies, so Five Eyes and NATO, of disrupting and degrading the organisation, the harm that the group had caused, over £1 million worth in at least two attacks on defence factories, all of those sorts of things, in the view of the Court of Appeal, meant that the ban was proportionate. It properly weighed up the competing interests. So another thing that was in the mind of the Court of Appeal that it took the High Court to task for was insufficient deference to the executive. And the Court of Appeal again said that was wrong. The Home Secretary has a special constitutional responsibility and institutional competence with the support of expert groups, which she had, and their evidence she relied upon in taking her decision. She was far better placed than a court to adjudicate on the balance between rights and interests. So it's a decision that really turns on its head the High Court decision. You've got the Court of Appeal is saying, you, the High Court, got this wrong on both accounts quite badly. We think the decision is a lawful decision.
And Lady Chief Justice Baroness Carr of the court, she recognised that the proscription of an organisation like Palestine Action is, quote, highly controversial, and acknowledged that it was supported by, quote, many otherwise lawful citizens, but in reinstating the ban said it was justified and proportionate. She also kind of, made the point that it isn't a direct action civil disobedience group like the suffragettes operating transparently in the open. She made the point that it's a covert organisation that operates with secret cells to avoid detection and prosecution of those using violence to destroy property and cause injury. And that's, I think, a direct quote.
Yes. I think she's got her history rather wrong on that. So the comparison she's trying to draw, and which props up the reasoning of the court, is we, the court, and the Home Secretary can treat this group differently because they aren't like previous groups. And the suffragettes are very clearly identified in her judgment as that sort of key comparator. But I think anybody with either a reading of history or a bit of basic research would have discovered that the truth of the suffragettes, just Damien, to give you some examples of the sorts of things that the suffragettes did in their campaign to get votes for women in the UK. They planted bombs in the house of the Home Secretary and of Lloyd George. They attempted to commit an arson attack on a theatre at which the Prime Minister Asquith was watching a play. A hatchet was thrown at Asquith. Post boxes were booby-trapped. Five postmen suffered quite severe phosphorus burns. Four people died, 24 people were seriously injured in a sort of a two-ish year campaign that really was only brought to an end with the First World War starting in 1914. I'm fairly sure they didn't advertise all of this either. I'm fairly sure they were a covert organisation. So the comparison simply doesn't stack up, I'm afraid.
So you're telling me that the suffragettes actually killed people, not that I remember there was a famous suffragette who stepped out onto a racing track, but you're telling me they actually killed people as well?
Yes, people certainly died. Again, with the issues, the same sort of issue here with Palestine Action, in that not necessarily intentional, but four people died. But I think, what the suffragettes did, which Palestine Action haven't ever done, is deliberately engage in a campaign of violence, the likely result of which was going to be death or serious injury. So planting bombs, throwing hatchets, booby-trapping postboxes with phosphorus, the likeliest effect of those is somebody is going to be hurt really very badly. And I think the Palestine Action case, on its own case, and I don't think there's been any real dispute about this, was that they were never intended to hurt other human beings. People have got hurt, and certainly in the Filton case, there was a very serious injury to a police officer. But the violence there was not an intentional violence as part of the campaign.
So just to let people know, the sorts of actions which were used by the government to support its view that Palestine Action was a terrorist organisation, it was banned in 2025, shortly after the break-in to an Air Force base in which activists damaged two military planes. There have been three separate events at premises of defence or weapons firms, Elbit, that one with strong ties to Israel, Thales and Insto Precision. And the judge made the point that, these firms actually work with Ukraine, with NATO, with Five Eyes. They work to secure the national security of the UK. But now, let's come to that case where there was somebody who was injured. So this ruling of the Court of Appeal comes just a few days, I think. It was the Friday, then the Monday or the Tuesday when the Court of Appeal decision came down. There was a ruling of a criminal court which sentenced four Palestine Action members to jail for entering the UK site of the Israeli defence industry firm Elbit Systems. And three of the four people who went onto the property, they were sentenced to around 5 years for trespass and for criminal damage. But there was one, there was Samuel Corner, age 23, and he was jailed for 7 years and 8 months for inflicting grievous bodily harm on a police sergeant. The court found that Corner fractured Sergeant Kate Evans' spine with a sledgehammer during the raid. So the judge found that there was absolutely no justification for this, quote, extreme and gratuitous force. David, I'm imagining supporters of the ban will say, look, this gives you an indication of how serious this group are.
Yes, absolutely right, Damien. And I'm not for a minute trying to defend that level of injury to a police officer. But I think there are a couple of points. I mean, in some ways, this proves the ban might not have been needed. You know, these people have been arrested, have been charged under the ordinary criminal law. And so one of the issues before both the High Court and the Court of Appeal was whether or not, in that balancing test, less intrusive measures could have been used. So this is a really critical element in proportionality balancing. You should only use the least intrusive measure. This is the old a sledgehammer to crack a nut analogy. So the fact that these can and have been prosecuted using criminal law and have been sentenced to what are quite long sentences could have shown that the ordinary criminal law is enough. Now, the Court of Appeal very much disputed that actually what the Home Secretary is trying to do is a different thing to what the ordinary criminal law allows you to do. But if this case is appealed, I would expect that to be quite a significant thing before the Supreme Court. I think the other thing to say is that Samuel Corner, again, I'm not defending him at all, but was not found guilty of intentionally using GBH. So there was no evidence, and not prosecuted or convicted, of intending to harm this police officer. The evidence, as I understand it before the court, and I think was accepted by the court, was that he had been tear gassed. They had all broken in, and they've all been sentenced for the various aggravated trespasses and criminal damage, as you say. But he was tear gassed. He was confused. He thought that he saw a mate of his being harmed by a police officer and lashed out with a sledgehammer in his hand. And as a result, has got an extra three and a half years in prison. So although at first sight it looks like an act of violence, it again, I don't think, is evidence that the group is of itself using violence for its campaign or as a strategy. That is not to undermine what has happened, nor the seriousness, nor the life-changing consequences for the police officer. But I think it is important that there is a context within which those sentences and that case was brought about.
She does have ongoing permanent injuries, I understand.
Yes, I think that's true.
And has been unable to return to the kind of work that she was previously doing. So we have this recent criminal trial and we have the Court of Appeal unanimously upholding the ban on Palestine Action and its proscription for being a terrorist organisation. So presumably the organisation and those convicted people will try to appeal these outcomes. Can supporters donate money to the appeal in the courts?
No, I think that would be legally very, very foolish thing to do. I think that is exactly what the ban is trying to do, is to cut off supply. So where the money is coming from, I do not know. But there obviously needs to be money for appeals and court cases to be brought. But the objective of any prescription or any ban is to do that of a few things, to cut off its networks, to its infrastructure, and to give it access to no money whatsoever. So it will be fighting, and I think it will inevitably try to appeal to the UK's Supreme Court. How that would be argued and its outcome is very moot. You would have to be arguing that the Court of Appeal got it wrong and sufficiently wrong as to allow the Supreme Court to overturn it. I mean, we've already identified a little bit of a route in, quite how big that hole would be. But if part of the court's reasoning is this was a group unlike the suffragettes, therefore the Home Secretary was entitled to treat them in a way different to the suffragettes, and we can establish that the suffragettes were exactly like this group or worse, then you have a route in that the Court of Appeals judgment was based on flawed reasoning, you know, flawed historical comparisons. And I gave evidence on something that's not dissimilar. So my evidence, or part of my evidence to the court, was that there were groups that had undertaken actions, animal liberation action and GM crops in the early 2000s in the UK, that had caused quite significant amounts of financial harm, but the government had never tried to prescribe it. In fact, the government, in some policy papers that I found, was very clear that the routes to deal with this are through the ordinary criminal law, through civil injunctions. And at no stage did it ever consider prescription, even though prescription, you know, was allowed to it. We would also, I suppose, also think, you know, something like Extinction Rebellion. Various criminal prosecutions have been brought and considerable damage. You know, Barclays, £100,000 worth of damage to Barclays, £300,000 worth to JP Morgan. So these direct action groups have caused financial harm to financial institutions, to defence companies. And so I think there is an argument that the Home Secretary has treated Palestine Action differently and thus in law discriminated.
And what could that mean for a possible appeal?
I think there are routes into the Supreme Court. The Court of Appeal decision is much, much tighter than the High Court's decision. You know, it's written, as judgments always are these days, to try and head off appeals. So they were very clear in the things that had gone into the equation which would have militated against a ban and have taken full account of those, the Court of Appeal would say. But nonetheless, there were too many things on the other side of the scales. So the decision is, I don't think it's appeal-proof, but it will be a very hard route to work out some path through that will firstly convince the Supreme Court to hear it, secondly convince at least three judges on the Supreme Court that they should overturn the Court of Appeal. That will come, I'm sure, and if that doesn't work, there will be, again, undoubtedly an appeal to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg. So I don't think this has run its full course, but at the moment, the group is banned, and anyone who supports or professes support will be arrested. There were several dozens, if not hundreds of people arrested outside the Court of Appeal when the decision was handed down for professing support for a banned organisation the day the court had said this organisation is lawfully able to be banned. So there may be protests, hundreds coming out again as they did last summer to hold their placards. They will undoubtedly be arrested by the police, certainly in London. Other areas of the UK, the police force have decided not to arrest. This is a sort of an interesting aspect of the case. So the police never have to arrest, but the Metropolitan Police in London have chosen to exercise their discretion and arrest anyone who is holding one of these placards. Last summer, there was a several hundred person protest in Glasgow, either Glasgow or Edinburgh, where Police Scotland decided they wouldn't arrest anyone. So there have been far, far fewer arrests in Scotland, in Manchester, Liverpool, Bristol, Brighton, places where there have been big demonstrations, but where the police have chosen to take a different sort of enforcement path.
Professor David Mead, a human rights law expert based at the University of East Anglia, thank you for speaking to The Law Report.
Thank you, Damon, for inviting me.
That's all we've got time for. Do follow The Law Report on ABC Listen. That way you'll get the latest podcast as soon as it becomes available. A big thanks to producer Christina Kukolia and also to audio producer Elise Simons. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk soon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.